My tea break guest this afternoon is my great friend John Colcutt, whom I've known for many years, but John's path and mine crossed again back in November when we were doing the remembrance service from St Peter's in Newdigate. John, it's lovely to have you at Susie Radio. Good afternoon to you.
Good to be with you on your home turf.
I suppose this is my home turf these days, John, really. Yes, that's absolutely right. Well, we reconnected at Newdigate, and I was absolutely delighted that as the local historical author, you were able to provide me with a script for our Remembrance Day broadcast without my having to do almost any work. Tell me a little bit about those figures that we were talking about at Remembrance Time. Who stands out in your mind as an historian from those years of the First World War?
Particularly, I think, from the 32 names on the war memorial. You know, we go to the Remembrance Day and we say we will remember them, and yet those people, I don't think we knew any of them, any of their history, who they were. They lived in Newdigate 100 years ago, but we knew nothing about them. So that's when I set about trying to find out about them. And who stands out? Well, I guess Aubrey Hudson. And what was that, in September 1914, he was punished at school for misbehaving, not attending. You'd know all about pupils like that. And that was in September in 1914. In July 1916, he was dead on the battlefield on the Somme. And I calculated he was 15 years and 1 month old.
That's absolutely staggering. And there were a number of Newdigate families who suffered multiple losses, weren't there?
Well, they did, yes. Mrs. Jansen, she lived at Newdigate Place, lovely arts and crafts building. And she lost two sons. The Tyler family lost three. There were three Wellers. So it hit the families really badly. When you think the population was probably only about 600 at the time, and 32 people, what is that, 5%?
It's frightening,
it
isn't
is,
it?
Yeah,
yes,
yeah.
In the centenary year in particular of the outbreak of the First World War. And Mrs. Jansen was a great benefactor to the village.
Yes, she was. She noticed that a lot of the kids, this is in the early part of the 20th century, were just hanging around the shop for just a little bit of light, because obviously there were no street lights or anything. So she started a wood carving class. And you may remember in St. Peter's Church, there's a lot of beautiful wood carving throughout the church. And this was done by the young people from her class. And she provided the money and all the pews in the church. So she did an awful lot in the village. She died in the Second World War. And in St. Peter's Church, there's a stained glass window to her with Jesus in the carpenter's shop, which is quite apt.
Which, of course, you showed me in the dusk of a November
That's
evening,
right, yeah.
which was wonderful. Mm. Now, I mentioned the remembrance service and how my commentary was made so much easier by your books. Tell us how you came to write those two books about Newdigate and a bit about the contents of the books.
Right, it goes back a long time, actually. To 1984, my son, David, was desperately ill with encephalitis, and he was at Great Ormond Street. And the rector at the time, Reverend Parker, knew that we just started a local history society, and he didn't want all the parish mags to end up in the central repository. So he gave them to me, and I idly took a bundle along to the hospital. I started reading them, and I realised that the period 1914 to 1918 was a very rich source, a very poignant source of information which hadn't been published before. So I turned it into a play reading, which we did a number of times throughout the 80s, and Surrey University and Dorking Halls and so on. And then it all went away. I was leading a busy life. When I retired, I decided these people should be remembered. So I then did probably 2 years of research into creating the book A Village at War. And that was published in the end of 2011.
It was so effective that an evening's reading, and I felt that I knew those people I was talking about during the Remembrance Sunday morning. It was tremendous. And now you've adapted the material further, I believe, for educational purposes.
Well, what the plan is that we're building a website, and we're going to be able to offer people to actually download the play reading and the appropriate music and appropriate pictures to actually stage it themselves. Although it's about Newdigate, it could be any village, community, anywhere in the country. And this will be downloadable. It should be on stream by about April. And it will be on www. village@war.co.uk, and you can download it for a fee, because there's quite a lot of license fees that have to be paid for the performing rights for music and for the pictures and so on. And then people can then have their own performance in schools. Everybody wants to do something to commemorate the First World War, and with this system they will be able to do it in a poignant way, a way which will bring in all the major events of the First World War, and can possibly make the school money, because if they did it performance to their to parents, for instance, they could they can actually make money for the school as well. So I think it will have a lot of uses in these centenary years.
And it is essentially a piece for voices, is it?
It's purely for voices. It's for readers. They don't have to learn their lines, because they read it. But they'll be dressed in uniform, and then the pictures will be displayed behind, and the appropriate music at the same time as well.
As well as the books and your involvement in education now with the material, there's been a trench experience for the village recently.
Yes. Andy Robertshaw is a First World War historian expert. He was the technical advisor for Steven Spielberg on The War Horse, the film. And as you do in Charlwood, he has built a series of trenches. And it really reenacts the trenches as they would have been in the Ypres salient and in Railway Wood in 1917. I decided to take a group of people who I knew were interested. We ended up with about 30 people. Along to have a look at the trenches, and I chose 3 o'clock on a February afternoon, knowing that it would be pretty murky, pretty cold, pretty damp, and it sure was. It's in good old Surrey clay, which is probably identical to Ypres clay. The water was coming up the duck boards, the sandbags were sodden, the barbed wire was sharp, and it was very, very realistic. And the way that Andy has built it, there's a little officer's dugout, there's a little clearing station, you can go up onto the parapet, you can look through the periscope, you can hold a Mills bomb, you can hold a rifle. It's really a very, very, very realistic experience.
And was it effective as far as the participants were concerned, do you think?
Yes, it had the desired effect, and they all came back. And I gave a little talk afterwards in the Six Bells in Newdigate about the experience of some of the people from Newdigate. And basically, if you look at the War Memorial, there are three classes of people. One was the professional soldier, one was the working class lad who worked in the fields, and the other was the, if you like, the business people. And the soldiers were clearly the professional soldiers who went. They were ready for it, and they expected it to be over quickly, and they were ready for it. The youngsters were used to being up at 4 o'clock when it was light, because then you got paid when they worked. They would have, if it rained, they would still work. If it was freezing cold, they'd work. But the people who were the lawyers, the bankers, the insurance people, they went because it was their duty. They had five times more chance of being killed than the infantry. And you've only got to look at some of the photographs of some of those officers who didn't survive, and the haunted look on their faces when the pictures were taken during the war. I think they suffered grievously, away from their homes, their warm homes, their comfortable clothes and food. And although they had a lot of privileges, more so than the infantry, but I think they suffered dreadfully.
We're going to take a break for a bit of music that you've chosen, and as we're talking about the war, it's really very appropriate that you've chosen one of the 60s leading protest singers. John's chosen something from Joan Baez for us now. That's Joan Baez and the Indigo Girls, specially chosen by my guest, John Colcutt. John, any particular reason why you chose that?
I think I've enjoyed Joan Baez's music since the late 60s, early 70s. She's grown older as I've grown older. She sings about getting older, as well as still been true to her beliefs her entire life.
I think you played the song at a very significant occasion quite
yes,
recently.
Yes, did. My wife and Albie and I, we reenacted our vows at St. Peter's, and this has been one of our favourite songs, and it was lovely to hear the harmonies throughout the old timbers of St. Peter's Church.
So we're playing that for your lady wife, Tina. Who else? Who else this afternoon?
Well, how
John?
About a little plug for my nephew?
Go on.
Pete Wiggs. He is one third of San Etienne, the Indian band, with Bob Stanley and Sarah Cracknell. And they they've been around now for about 15 years, so check them out. They've got a good sound.
You and I first came into contact as parent, teacher, and as cricketers as well. And there's a connection, isn't there, between the Brocas, the playing field in Newdigate Village, and the whole business of remembrance.
That's correct. The Brocas, and funnily enough, nobody really knows why it's called the Brocas. It used to be called, there was three fields, East Buckhurst, West Buckhurst, and Buckhurst Meadow. And then after the Second World War, it was decided to purchase it as a memorial to the fallen of First and Second World Wars. And it was bought for about £1,500 and turned into the very, very, very popular recreation ground that it is now. So we've got the cricket, there's football, there's tennis, there's bowls, there's six-a-side court, and then there's the village hall and the village club. And the whole lot, and tennis as well. So there's something for everybody there, and it's all managed by the a registered charity called the Newdigate Community Centre.
And to conclude this fascinating chat, John, tell us why the Brocas and the cricket and village sport is so much at the forefront of everybody's mind in the village at the moment.
Well at the moment, the cricket club and the Scouts, well, they have two buildings. They were both London prefabs. What are they supposed to last, 10 years? Something like that. And they were brought down to Newdigate in the 60s to use one as a cricket pavilion, the other one as a scout hut. Well, they've been enlarged, they've been brick-clad, we've all done our best to make them a homely place, but they've really had it. The frames are rotting, and we get vermin coming in. It's very, very difficult to maintain and to heat. And we've got no disabled access as well. And the cricket club is a focus club, club marked, which you would know about. And we have an equity policy, and we can't fulfill that because we just can't get a wheelchair in. We really do need to replace those buildings. So we've set up a fund, the Newdigate Pavilion and Scout Hut Appeal Fund, and it had fantastic response from the village. Every organisation, from the Friendship Group, the Choir, Pantomimes, we've raised over 70,000 so far, and we've got big funding applications pending now with Sport England, the Veolia Waste Management Company, and the Surrey Community Improvement Fund. That's from Surrey County Council.
Do you have a target in mind?
Yes, we hope to start in September. If everything comes into place, we will do. The cost is £250,000 for the pavilion and £90,000 for the scout hut. A commercial quote was nearer £600,000, but this has all been on the back of local people, local businesses, local expertise, all quoting, and that's why we're getting the much, much lower price. We're saying built by Newdigate people for Newdigate people.
I must say that the whole concept of community in the village impresses me. I think it's one of the tightest communities in the whole of our broadcast area.
At 70,000, we are there, and with the total to be raised is 340,000. So it is down to these major fundings. We tried to get everything into place. We're hoping to start a table tennis club there. We're hoping for Pilates to be using it. And we've got the theatrical group as well hope to be using it. So we're trying to broaden the usage of the whole of all the facilities.
And to wrap up, how can anybody help you to raise funds?
Well, if they go onto the cricket club website, www.newdigatecricketclub.co.uk, there is a dedicated link to the pavilion. We have my donation, which is can be a direct donation. We've got lots of things going. We've got our young girl cricketers are taking part of the swim marathon on the 8th of March, which is being run by Dorking Deep Dean Rotary Club. There's a group of us going to walk the Monopoly board. That's in May, so that can all be sponsored. And then it's very easy to just give there. You can buy a brick, which can be engraved as well. So there's lots of things on that website of different ways that people can help. But if anybody's got any skills or they can donate materials, then obviously we'd really love to hear from them.
John, we've got to wrap it up. We could have gone on for very much longer. But John Colcutt from Newdigate, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you this afternoon on our tea break.
Thank you, David.